live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 343, wherein we will talk about addiction, we'll talk about betrayal, we'll talk about love, we'll talk about loss, we'll talk about recovery and healing. And this is definitely going to be, if you have perhaps littler ones with you listening to this, maybe listen to it first before you let them listen to it. My guest today is an old friend of mine from years and years back.
Yeah.
Marty Bowen, good to have you here.
Thank you.
So I first of all have to applaud you for, I mean, that's your name, right? It's not an alias. You're sharing, this is you and your story. And so I want you to start wherever you feel like you should start with this.
Yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to share my story. This has been a very vulnerable situation to be able to share. I felt strongly to do so, but hesitant because of just the situation and children and family and people and the hurt. But I just really am hoping more than anything that my hope would be that people would come away with more knowledge and understanding that we can be just kinder to each other, understanding that we all are broken,
mm-hmm.
and how can we help each other instead of judging each other, and just utilizing the atonement on so many levels that it's available to us. That's really kind of the platform I feel like for me in wanting to share my story.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into that, and I'm glad you bring up the atonement part of it, right? Because ultimately, we are all broken people, right? This, what we're going to talk about today, may not be our trials placed before us, but it also, I know for many, and could be for many else, at least in part, some of the trials that they have before them. So let's pick this up. In a pretty normal life growing up,
yeah.
I would presume, right?
Yep.
Mom and dad going mm-hmm. to church, all that stuff.
Grew up in a very active LDS home, healthy parents, marriage. My mom did get cancer when I was in high school, and she passed away when I was a teenager, and that was difficult. But I think that was the beginning of me learning about the atonement and mm-hmm. understanding it wasn't just to repair sin, but understanding it was to understand me,
mm-hmm.
which I think has been helpful in this situation. And yeah, so just a pretty normal, traditional person
yeah.
growing up in the Salt Lake Valley.
And then what, we go off to college?
Yeah, so then I went up to college and I met my spouse there, and we got married, and we're married for 21 years. And I would say what I thought was a really great marriage
mm-hmm.
and a lot of really great things, and we had children. And then it wasn't until I think just thinking it was busy, like we always do. They kind of talk about where you have to nurture your marriage or mm-hmm. else, you know, it's not going to last. And
right.
We had some moments of that, just busy kids and kind of communicating that. But there ended up being other issues, underlying issues that kind of brought to light maybe what was really going on.
So how old were you when you got married?
I was 19.
Dated for?
We dated, gosh, we met on spring break. And then got married that December.
Okay, so less than a year, pretty quick.
Yeah, it was.
Was he older?
He was just home from his mission.
Okay, so a couple years older, and that was mm-hmm. back when men had to be 19 to serve. So he probably would have been 21, 22.
Right. So both young, though. And I started college as a young because of my birthday. So even adding that into it, it's young,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, just reaffirming that young point of view.
Yes.
But so you get married, and you sort of alluded this to a little bit that there may have been some problems even before you guys got married. But talk about like the dating, the courtship, and then the marriage, how that was.
Sure. So we met and actually were really good friends at first. And so a lot of his guy friends are also a bunch of my friends as well, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, once we decided to date, it was really close because we were just friends at first. And I felt really fortunate that we had that base in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got married, and I would say you're young, but naive, but also hopeful. And I think sometimes marriage is kind of a gamble. You don't really know who you're going to end up being at a time. I was in college mm-hmm. and he was still in college as well. And we were growing up together in a sense, I feel yeah. like, you know, because we were both young and, but really good things. I do remember some things that now maybe I, having the education I do now, would mm-hmm. maybe question or, but I don't even think he considered it to be something that you would question either, right? I okay. think even because the internet came out at a time where I just don't even think any of us were really prepared
right.
to handle what it was capable of doing.
So the first incident, was it pornography, an exchange about pornography that started to kind of crack the shell of what you envisioned this perfect marriage or?
Yeah, I think from my understanding, there was just an introduction, you know, by chance for him at a younger age. And I don't know the extent of what took place with that mm-hmm. Really up until we met. I think even I can say even safely in society right now that it's no chance you won't see it. You know, you will see it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
No,
kids are bombarded with
yeah,
it, right?
Yeah, it's everywhere. And yep. really, pornography can be however it's viewed. It can be the billboard on the street to mm-hmm. the ads that come in the mail to actually diving in on the internet, right?
Right.
So I think what happened for me is we got married. We had communicated about some of those things, but it wasn't any alarming or anything. And
in a way that was like, oh, hey, you know, I have looked at this, but it's not an issue, but just
no, you know, yeah, just hey, this is just, which I would say is actually fairly common.
Sure.
We've all had an experience with it in our life, I would say.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't until a year into our marriage that I had found something on our computer. And I really think it was by some miracle because honestly, I didn't know how to search history or anything like that. And mm-hmm. at that time, I was so hurt. I felt like I had been cheated on. It was so sad to me. And I had talked to him about it and we made an appointment to go talk to our student ward bishop. And that didn't really go over very well. I, once again, in his defense, I don't think that we were prepared for what the internet was or mm-hmm. how to respond, even as an auxiliary leader. Like, okay. I don't think he knew, but I was really hurt. And that kind of just put that in the back of my mind. But I was not aware of any pornography that was involved until my day of discovery.
Hmm. You mentioned that it feels like a betrayal, like you'd been cheated on almost. And I think that some people that maybe don't understand this would be like, no, it's an image or a magazine or whatever the thing is. How does it feel like that betrayal?
Yeah, I think for me, because I was this new bride and felt like he has me, why mm-hmm. would he need to turn to something else? Or am I being compared to? Or am I not good enough? Or what am I not completing for him? And that was where that just felt like he was still reaching out almost to other women, even though it's not that they were communicating right. back to him. It was just, that's how I felt for me. That was my experience when that happened.
And you said the experience with the auxiliary or the ecclesiastic leader, that sort of, did it fall on deaf ears or did it just not sort of work?
No, I really believe that it was one of those situations where he was just giving what he thought was the best, you
he
know,
being the, like the
being
bishop
an
or
idea
whatever.
Of it was, yeah, the bishop was, you know, this idea of, you know, men are visual and it was true too, but I felt like I didn't feel understood and I more had to be okay that that's what happened. Mm-hmm. And
well, men, well, you know, men like to look at these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, they're visual kind of and this is just, but this is normal. Mm-hmm. And I felt like more, I was hurting and felt cheated on and I just kind of had to move on from that. And really we didn't talk about that much more because it just kind of happened and I believed it was a one-time event until there would be like lies throughout our marriage or other kind of red flags that would pop up, then I would ask him again about it. But for the most part, I just dealt with it, that's okay. Men are visual and this is, I wouldn't say normal. I knew it not to be, but I think even from that time to where we are now, we're just so much more educated about what pornography really is and what it can do and the harm. And mm-hmm. I think unfortunately that he probably too, as time progressed and maybe feeling like maybe it was validating to him to hear like, oh, I am a guy and this is visual, mm-hmm. but then also carrying that shame and knowing that it hurt me or that this is not right, that I think that held that secret for him that almost makes me so sad, you know, that he wasn't able to reach out or get help or do that to be able to get rid of, I refer to it as these rocks in a backpack, just yeah. kind of carried that was his own personal burden and his own secret in a sense that was going to go to the grave with him and his relationship with God. That was what he was going to figure out between the two of them.
It's interesting because you speak about not only the betrayal of like the first finding out, but then it speaks to your character where he says, hey, I'm not going to do this again. And you're like, okay, all right. If you're not going to do this again, I'm on board. But that extra sense of weight or that additional feeling of distrust, because then you ask him about him again and, you know, he gets caught. And it's hard to build trust on anything mm-hmm. if you, anytime you question about those things, that it comes out being not what you thought it would
right.
be.
Right. And just to clarify, I never actually caught him ever again until just this recent when I actually found the discovery of what has been going on. So that was a period of 20 years, you know, where that first time to then fast forward to where I am now.
And we'll get there for sure. But kind of tease these ideas of like lies along the way or different things. Talk about some of those things.
Yeah. So I would catch him sometimes in these small little lies. And to me, and I will say he is a good person.
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to attack his character, but part of the hiding and, you know, and I don't know if part of it was maybe his personality, the way he was raised. I don't really have the answers to why, mm-hmm. But that was difficult for me. That was, again, a different type of betrayal. Mm-hmm. For example, one was over something so simple, but yet I was so hurt. But when I asked him about it, it was, why are you lying to me about this? If you're lying to me about this, then what else are you lying to me about?
Right.
But it was well, if I told you the truth, then you would get more mad. You'd just be so mad.
I'm just protecting you.
Yeah.
I don't want you to get more mad.
Yeah.
I'm just protecting you right now.
And I would sit there thinking, but I'm more hurt that you lied to me. And then I would second guess myself and think, but maybe would I have really been that upset about that? Because yeah. I don't think I would have, but maybe I would have. And so it was kind of this confusing thing where I felt like, okay, it was justified that maybe he could lie to me. And, you know, there were only not very many things that I would say, you know, in a span of 21 years in a marriage, I mean, you can almost pinpoint out what they are because it wasn't like this constant lying, this
sure.
constant or anything like that.
If it would have been constantly bad, I wouldn't imagine that it would have lasted
exactly.
that long, obviously.
And I think that there are aspects of that, you know, I trusted him. Mm-hmm. And whenever I would have a red flag or second guess myself or even think, I think he might be looking at pornography because something would kind of come up to me that I would feel like was off, I would also be like, ow, he holds this calling. He's doing all these things. I can't believe I would even consider that would be true, you know? And I would talk to him and he'd be like, no, no, no. And so I just have to believe him, right? That's your spouse. And that's
right.
what you're supposed to do in a marriage is to trust them. And so that was a big part of the betrayal when the discovery came about, was just seeing the truth for what it was and how I did trust.
Right.
And that was almost used against me a little bit.
Right. Yeah. Just trust me. Why wouldn't you trust me?
Yeah. Trust
me. Oh, you shouldn't have trusted me.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take a break for a quick second. When we come back in the second block, I want to talk, about what led to the catching, the surprise that you've sort of talked about. All the emotions and the feelings around that. And then hopefully let's get into the what you do, where you pick up pieces from that. We'll come back and do that in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what? I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something. And then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N at gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Here in the second block of the Cultural Hall, if you are not following us on the social medias, make sure you do it. We're on all the places at the Cultural Hall. Would love to interact with you there. You can also always email us if you have a great guest suggestion, or you yourself might be a guest suggestion. It's contact@theculturalhall.com. All right, so Marnie, correct me on any of this if I'm wrong. You're married like 20, 21 years. For the most part, it's pretty good. I'm betting you had some really great times. There were some, you know, fights about ridiculous things and, you know, also some of these things that we've already talked about. Now, you allude to like this discovery. So let's just jump in both feet.
Yeah. So I would say leading up to the discovery, like you'd mentioned, I would say our lives were pretty normal, just the busy. I think there had been a moment in the spring before that I had noticed kind of this disconnect and that we needed to make changes, and had a dinner. We talked about how we might need to make those changes. Mm-hmm. And it was a difficult conversation to have because it was this reality of like we don't want to grow apart,
right?
And we fast forward now to
how long ago was that conversation?
That was this last spring.
So like months ago or like a year and months ago?
So this was just barely in 2018.
Okay.
And I would say April
of 2018.
Of 2018. And now we fast forward to the end of August and I catch him in a small lie, which leads to, again, me saying, why, you know, if you're lying to me about this. And so we ended up getting in an argument, and he had traveled quite a bit. And so he was out of town, and I got a text that he wanted a divorce. Mm. And that was devastating for me because I thought, wow, is it that bad, you know? And
right.
Just kind of a shocker. And then he came back into town and I kept trying to kind of talk about it.
Yeah,
and
like, hey, your text message.
Yeah, you text me, let's talk about this.
Yeah.
And finally was able to come to a conversation where, again, kind of confronting some of these issues. You know, we have a great family. Why? What's going on? And he didn't want to do couples therapy, but wanted to work individually. And mm-hmm. I had felt that it was my responsibility of why everything was failing at that point.
Really?
I did. It was... even communicated that he was a simple person. And that was really, really a dark time for me. That was kind of the beginning time of when it was really dark and me feeling like my family was failing because of me.
Hmm.
And so I got a therapist and that was really helpful. And we started working through our relationship and trying to communicate. And I told him I needed to trust him. So he needs to be honest. I would do my best to react the best way.
Right.
You know, just kind of some of those things. I didn't feel safe because he brought up divorce and just kind of some things that I felt like I also needed to feel like a priority. So that was, you know, I would say starting in the fall. And like I said, I would say I believe that we were doing better, that mm-hmm. we were working towards, that we were doing better.
He was seeing a therapist as well?
He was.
Okay. So he had joined you as far as that goes, or at least said that he was going to do that. So you weren't just solo you going. He also was.
Yeah, I did feel like I had to kind of be the nudge, and it was difficult because I felt like I didn't want to be the one to tell him to do it. Like, right. I wanted him
to, I want
him,
you to want this.
Yeah, and yeah. I wanted him to be the proactive one, but he kind of, you know, but he did, and I don't know what their conversations were about, but sure. I know that I was really thankful for my therapist and for her to just help me sort out and make sense of maybe some of the things or the dynamics of what was going on in our marriage at that time. Mm-hmm. With the information that we had. So it was our anniversary in December. And that was kind of a sad one for me in that I knew that we were celebrating 21 years and I didn't even know what kind of a card to buy. I knew that I loved him, but I wasn't sure what our marriage looked like. And in the past, I felt like it could be so easy to say what I wanted. And I just didn't know how to handle that. So I was excited about Christmas with the kids. We got a trip to go on spring break together. He ended up buying me a car and was going to surprise me, you know, on Christmas with it. And we had our normal, you know, Christmas Eve traditions, and everything was great with the family, as I thought. Said prayers, kissed, got in bed, and I was excited for the next morning. And around 2 a.m., I rolled over and just was awakened, and I saw a phone, and I opened it and read, and that's where I could not even comprehend what I was seeing. And it was a conversation that he had fallen asleep while texting a girl, and to say devastating is an understatement. I think I just was even more in shock. It really was kind of an out-of-body experience. I then went out of that, and there was pictures, conversations, and then I went out of that to see the truth of all these other conversations with other people and kind of put together a timeline. And then you start to see the overlap of what was really happening, where I think that we're spending Christmas Eve together as a family and talking and communicating, but really he's having these conversations or leaving the house to go call, or even on the phone upstairs while kids are on the other side of the door. Just kind of that overlap of just and
that duplicitousness, right?
Right. And life. Because of the person that I believed he was, I almost could not believe it to be true. It just could not possibly be true. This could not be real. And I became physically ill, and so it woke him up, and he got up and came back in the bed and was looking for his phone, and I had it in my hand, so I slid it over, and then he texted on his phone, and I waited for him to fall back asleep, and then I went over, and when I saw that he had texted her again, that's when I knew this is real.
Yeah.
This is real.
Yeah. I can't even imagine just in general, right? But that then you waited for him to go to sleep and you didn't confront him, right? And it's Christmas Eve. If I'm understanding the like the night of all family nights, almost, you know, we sort of fantasize these things. It's a night like any other, but I can't comprehend what I would do in that situation. You said you got ill, physically ill.
Mm-hmm.
So then what? Because you have to get up in the morning, and for all intents and purposes, it is, hey, kids, what an amazing day, right?
Yeah, it was extremely difficult. I obviously couldn't go back to sleep, and I watched the clock just tick, and I was praying so hard, Heavenly Father, I know I can't go back to sleep, but just give me the strength and discipline to allow my children to have a good Christmas morning. And so I just waited until it was time to finally be like, I'm getting everybody up. And when my kids were all standing at the top of the stairs to come down, I just hugged each of them and was emotional. And I'm not typically a crier, but I knew their life had been changed forever.
Yeah.
And it was pretty surreal watching him navigate life normal and me now seeing it for the truth of what it was. And knowing these gifts that we did and gave was a lie. Mm-hmm. And that was really difficult. And I had texted my therapist at like 4 a.m. to say, what do I do? Do I pretend like I don't know?
Right.
What do I do in this situation?
And it's like,
Christmas
I don't know.
Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, she told me that I needed to contact or I needed to talk to him. Mm-hmm. So we had to get through the presents sure. and then his parents coming over. And then we went to my family. And then because I had the new car, I said, let's go for a drive. But I was flu-like symptoms, you know, to where my dad offered to just take the kids so I could go home and take a nap. But I was just so physically ill and sick. It was really a surprising reaction, I suppose, is that my physical body actually took a toll on it. So
how did you begin to navigate that conversation? Because I, you know,
hey,
let's go for a ride in the car. So you fell asleep last night. Like that seems, I mean, I don't mean to make light of it, but I seriously, like, I just would be like, I saw this and I can't believe that you would, you know, and just a literal word vomit.
Yeah, no, that I can see. And I think even sometimes we envision, what would I do if I were in this situation? Even though I never believed it would be me,
right.
You kind of think, this is what I would do. But I just said, let's go for a drive. And I just asked him, you know, how do you think we're doing? How is our relationship? Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, we're doing great. I think we should go to couples therapy and move forward with that. And I kind of wanted to give him an opportunity to come clean.
Right. Like,
and
is there anything? Yeah.
So, and at that point, I just said, I think we have different goals. And I just saw your work phone. And I was still in shock. Like, what were you thinking?
Mm-hmm.
What, you have this family. And it, I think he, too, was shocked to be caught.
Mm-hmm.
Because now finding out had been going on for at least 2.5 years.
Oh, my
if
gosh.
Not longer. So mm-hmm. he had been able to do a lot. And I had no idea. We had no idea. Nobody had any idea. So it was kind of a sad situation. I actually remember feeling like it was more pathetic than I felt hurt. Like, to see what I saw was like, that really, that's what it is? That, you know, is sad. Hmm. It was sad to me.
At the point that you confronted him, were there still the feelings of like, what did I not do? Or at this point, had you been through enough of the therapy to recognize that this was something that he struggled with and that your behavior or lack of behavior in any sort of way was irrelevant?
No, in that moment, I still was more just baffled. Like, mm-hmm. I thought we were a couple. I thought it was my reality, what I still thought.
Yeah.
And I was still trying to make sense of it, right? I mean, that's part of the betrayal trauma is the idea of a mirror you've been looking in, it just got shattered.
Yeah.
And there's parts of yourself you can still see, but you're so confused. And I still didn't almost believe he was capable of what I read and saw.
Mm-hmm.
And for the sake of Christmas, I said, hey, let's not talk to the kids about it. Let's go home and enjoy the Christmas holidays. And I'd like you to move out after. So I didn't feel that until I think I really even started talking with my therapist and understanding what was really going on. And mm-hmm. that was the discovery aspect that was just so traumatizing. I felt so violated too. And starting to now see, like I said, the trueness of the timeline. When mm-hmm. you look at, you think one thing's happening, but really those choices, those were just more lies. Or this is what was happening during that situation. Like, I thought that we were doing this, but really while we were, he was also doing this and this and this, or not able to be there because of this and this. And that was really hard.
Yeah. Did he come clean and say, yeah, you know what, I'm sorry and I'll move out? Or was it more of a, no, what, why are you looking on my phone?
It was both.
Yeah.
It was, he knew he was caught. Mm-hmm. And part of when I confronted him, I asked him to go home and to read his phone and to see everything that I saw and mm-hmm. read. And that kind of caused a little bit of a freak out and him feeling, you know, I think the fear of the truth coming of what happened. And he was not forthcoming about what had happened. It was, this happened one time, one person, and it's over. But I even knew from seeing his phone that wasn't true.
Right.
And he was trying to communicate with the kids. And I, too, was also trying to figure out, how do you manage the children in this situation? And this is chaos. This is new to me. But over time, there were some things that, yes, but I would say for the majority, no.
Right.
I even had held something up to him, you know, like a fake account that was, no, that's not me. I didn't do that. And
that's that looks an awful lot like your picture right there.
And it was no picture. It was just a name. It had been linked that through in an email that it was. And I blew my mind that he believed. And I don't know even still to this day if because of the justifications and because of the multiple lies that he may really not know the truth. I know that he had to have known about that because, you know, but it was just, he wanted to believe it true. And because he'd created his own reality of what was true, that to me, he could also convince me, no, I didn't do that. That's not me.
Right. He has to convince himself. One of the hardest things probably is that then being confronted is that then he has to confront his own behavior. And in some way, like that people are able to create, no, I, you know, it was a one time, or I don't have a problem, right? Until someone can say, no, you have a problem, and this is what the problem is. Bum, 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 bum. You've talked a little bit about betrayal trauma and trauma recovery. I want to take a break again, and when we come back in the third block, I want to talk about what you're doing now. I mean, you have mentioned, you have kids, you have a life of your own. How do you pick up the pieces from this and move on? And we'll do that coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Consumer alert! Consumer alert!
Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. There's an extremely insane computer infection called Zeus ZBot, infecting hundreds of thousands of computers across the world. This infection is super malicious because it puts you in danger by recording every keystroke you make into your computer, stealing your confidential information, including your banking passwords. You could be infected and never know until you have all your money sucked out of your bank account. At PC Laptops, we can help. If you think you've been infected or just want to be safe, please bring in your PC, no matter what brand it is, into any one of our locations right now, and we'll scan it for free. Why are we doing this for free? Because we want to impress you so much that if you or any of your friends need a computer, service, or phone repair, you come to PC Laptops first. Get into any one of our locations right now or check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, where computers start at $7.99. PC Laptops, we love you!
Here in the third block, and by the way, thank you for continuing to listen to this point. If you have not yet considered to be a Patreon subscriber of The Cultural Hall, do so, patreon.com/The Cultural Hall. It helps make conversations like these and others possible. We have certainly gone to the depths of it, so now let us climb back out into the light. This, if I've got timeline right, then this is in the last 9 months that you've essentially been sort of clawing your way out of this hell-like experience.
Right.
So how's that been?
It's been very interesting. I would think that it would be such a dark place, which it was and has been at times. But I can't deny, looking back, that even though I could not prevent, or God cannot prevent, you know, the free agency or choices. Yeah,
the most frustrating thing, right? The agency of others.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
our best gift that we get.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I was not neglected. And I can see, looking back, how Heavenly Father was very mindful of my prayers and me, and even helping prepare me and been there. Even though after the discovery, I was so numb, I almost couldn't feel. I couldn't feel the spirit. I couldn't feel. I just was in the shocked kind of a phase. And
your life is going on, but you don't feel it. It's like you see it almost as if a movie. But you're just like, yeah, I guess I did that. I guess these things did get done. I was there, I guess.
Yeah, and you're not eating or sleeping or functioning, and my brain is just reliving what happened and looking back at everything in our marriage to say what was real, what was not real. So I feel like for me, it's was the darkest of times and the best of times too, in the sense that I have also never felt so close to God, or feel his presence, and to recognize, I use on a lot of my stuff I post, the angels around us. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like there were so many people who helped me and were there for me and answers to prayers, mm-hmm. and really helped my family as well, that who were trying to make sense of everything themselves and feeling so broken and yeah. different, to feel yeah. like, no, we're so loved. Like, I don't think I made a meal for 2 months, and really? People would bring groceries. And granted, I will say there is that dark time when you also, nobody knows. Mm-hmm. And that was really difficult. I felt like I was lying. I felt like I was living a double life, because I knew we were separated. I knew things weren't what I thought they were, yet I was putting on the happy face and mm-hmm. showing up at events, and everyone's saying, how was your Christmas?
Oh,
and
my gosh, you look so great.
Yeah,
how are you?
I know,
so
you're losing
good.
So much weight. Yeah. What are you? What, and I'm like, you do not want what I have. But, you know, it's just this kind of ongoing, you're trying to function, be a parent and be present, and yet you're so distracted. And I literally would pray every morning, please help me to discern between what is most important, because I felt pulled in so many directions. Mm-hmm. And I feel really thankful that my kids, I was able to get them into therapy, a great therapist right in the get-go, and that was really helpful for them. It was important for them to express their feelings and to acknowledge. And I feel like our family, you know, all of a sudden with the kids and me, became like, this is our new. We don't know what we're doing, you know, and someone would have emotions and it was okay. You know, normally maybe I would be like, we don't behave like that. But I was thinking, yeah, he deserves to act like that right now.
Get
I'm
it.
Feeling yeah. it too. And he deserves every second of that. And it was also really hard to watch that. Mm-hmm.
Because they had absolutely nothing to do with it, right? I mean, they're just sort of, not that you did either, but, you know, you're part of this relationship and you've said, hey, you know what, it's best for you to leave. They're just sort of bystanders going, I guess dad's gone. Mom, yeah. what
Mom
what's
and dad
going
on? Don't fight. And, yeah. and now dad's moving out. Like, yeah. we're so confused. Yeah. It was just a really confusing time. But I did feel like, especially once I was able to express that the truth of what was happening, and I was so done with the lies. And mm-hmm. if with my kids, even, it was like, do I say you're separated, do I not say it? And I finally said, no, we are talking about this is our truth. And once I did that, I just feel like there was so much love and support. And, you know, it's one of those situations too that I am really fortunate in my story, that I felt super supported by mm-hmm. my bishop and stake president. I know not everybody always feels that way, but it's that crazy thing where you're in this dark place, and I find his phone and I reach out to my therapist. I call my dad and I make an appointment with my bishop. Mm-hmm. You just don't know what to do. You're kind of in this, I don't know. And yeah. I was so thankful for my bishop and what he had to share with me. But I feel like I also learned through this process and through hearing other people's stories that they are also just people. Mm-hmm. And they, as much as I would encourage all of them, which I know that the church helps put out a lot of resources for them because pornography is a huge issue.
Sure.
But just to help them to educate themselves as best as possible so they can help. But I think often people will go into their bishop hoping that you're going to be able to give me the crystal ball. And I remember wanting a crystal ball. What
just
do I do?
Tell me the thing. I'll
do
the thing.
Do I stay?
Yeah.
Do I leave? Like, what does this look like? And you just want someone to give you answers, yet you're trying to kind of keep on the down low for the sake of the kids, for the sake of healing. And understanding that no doubt they can receive revelation or be inspired, mm-hmm. I should say, mm-hmm. to help, you know, offer advice. But really that they're there to counsel you and guide you, like assist you. And I know that, you know, even my dad, because of being a bishop, that they receive revelation at times, or not even at revelation again, but like inspiration to suggest a scripture or say something that might encourage a conversation.
Yeah.
But ultimately, at the end of the day, when you're in there and they say to you, you need to read your scriptures and say your prayers, they're saying you're entitled to your own revelation.
Yeah.
And I feel like that was really empowering to me, that I even had with my stake president, like, some great conversation and some encouragement, partly because of the experiences that he'd had with seeing people. Mm-hmm. And he offered some advice to me, and I was, because he had suggested it, I took it. But then circumstances happened that made it so I wasn't able to do that. And I was so thankful to have my own personal revelation and to have that I can receive that for myself. And I never believed that the answer for me could be to leave the situation.
Yeah.
I kind of always thought, oh no, for better or worse, you stick through this.
Death
but,
it, you know, mm-hmm. at death and beyond, right, within the faith.
But recognizing that he at the time was not willing to change or want to work. And because of that, I chose to leave. And that's hard. That's hard because I feel like I'm failing. Am I failing him? Am I not willing? And there were so many circumstances that came up during that time of, you know, the church has resources to help with addiction support. And I went to some of these meetings and I met people and they gave me resources. And I just feel like Heavenly Father was so mindful at allowing me to process this and come up with my answer. And once I knew that the getting a divorce was the direction I wanted to go, I felt like then all of a sudden I had people reaching out to me to help offer support. But had they reached out to me even a few weeks before,
you wouldn't have been ready for it.
I wouldn't have been ready for it. And so I feel like even though I'd had that answer, it's okay to go before, I still, you know, kept trying. And I kind of wanted to see all the options. And even where I'm at now, I realized that we still can both heal. You know, my former spouse can still heal. It just wasn't meant for us to be together. There's still a great ending to this story. And I feel like for me, part in wanting to share my story is because there was not a lot of resources geared towards being divorced. A lot of it was, how do you deal with this while you stay in the marriage?
Right.
And for me, I feel like, no, this can be a success story being divorced as well. And we're working through getting healthy and through this betrayal trauma and understanding, you know, things that I would have never known, like going to couples therapy. I thought that's the answer. You go do that. But really, when you're in a betrayal situation, part of the conflict in your marriage is because of the betrayal. It's not a marriage issue.
Right.
And so you really need your own individual therapy to be able to do that and then have these great resources that the church and other places offer. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge advocate for therapy. I almost think it should be a preventative versus like something that we
like
do to solve.
Like everyone gets one.
Yeah.
Your frequency of which you go, that's up to
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
But everybody's got a person.
Yeah. Why is it not covered that we just go to couples therapy every couple of years?
Yeah.
Or, and I wonder too if, again, for my ex, if he'd had that opportunity or platform to feel like he could share and take away that shame, we wouldn't be where we're at. You know, it would have been a different issue to be talking about, like of coping or anxiety or stress that was kind of the underlying condition of maybe some of these choices.
And you also have the desire, obviously, for success because this is your kid's dad, right?
Absolutely.
So you'd love for him to heal and to be healthy so that he can fulfill that role to its maximum potential as well. Even though you guys aren't going to be together.
Yes.
There isn't that, well, but maybe, you know, one day we could get back together. No, not that. We can all dispel that. I think there's a lot of people who are like, but maybe. But that the end of the road, that successful thing can be that you both heal and be individuals.
Right. And I think that's the true success story is that he's able to heal and we are as well. And I love that the atonement can be used in so many aspects. And with my kids that we get to teach that the atonement helps you feel understood, that Christ knows how you're feeling and what you're going through, but also understands my heart and my ex's heart and knows where he's coming from and that I personally cannot forgive on my own. I know that my trust may never be repaired, but that I am required to forgive, and I know that I have to travel through this journey of feeling all the betrayal and the hurt to be able to get to that point. It's kind of my own personal atonement to then be able to turn it over to Christ to help me forgive. I can't do that on my own, and I think that's important, and that I try to teach my children and to help them. Dad also gets to use the atonement in a different light of repentance and repair his heart, because truly, I can't know the truth of who he really is or what he's been through or what, you know, mortal traits did he come with that maybe would create a situation for him that's more difficult than, say, for someone else. And I'm so thankful I don't have to be the judge of that. And I know that even me sharing this story and situation and my truth is sometimes hard for people to hear, because I think people are like, that is so hard, and they want to judge him. And it's easy to say there's no lines in the sand, and for some reason we do take sides, but ultimately, like, I would love that we can all really sit in church mm-hmm. and look at each other and know that we all have our struggles. I mean, I love that talk that was on just recently by Uchtdorf about how we're all this cars. We're not shiny cars, but mm-hmm. that we're, you know, there to be repaired. And why not look at it from the perspective of the bishop who is also has his own struggles, looking out at everybody and knows how broken we all are.
No.
Yet we try to be like, that family's perfect and that's family's perfect, but really that's not true. And if somehow we can relate to each other, once again, maybe we can understand and be like, this is a problem that's affecting a lot of people. How can we help each other by talking about it? And I want to respect people who don't want to share,
sure.
you know, for their sake or whatever they want to do. But in my situation, I feel like this is my truth and how I feel like to heal and help people and be honest, because it was really a dark, dark time when I felt like nobody knew but me, the bishop, and my ex and my therapist.
Yeah. Where are you at now today?
I feel like I'm doing really well. I think there are triggers because it's kind of coming upon that year mark that's difficult.
Interesting, right?
Yeah, it's hard. And even though I know I'm experiencing it, I am leaning into it. And there's the abandonment grief cycle that I really love that I had posted about that helps me acknowledge that what I'm going through is normal and healthy. Mm-hmm. And I'm in betrayal trauma support groups and also with a therapist that helps me recognize and validate and to do things. And I do see how I am moving forward, that you do heal. I remember being in that time where it consumed my every thought, and the fact that I don't wake up every morning from a nightmare and my life is a nightmare and that's all I think about, that I can try to be a mom and the things that I need to, because I do feel like some of that was taken from me sure. during that time and sometimes still is, and that's frustrating. But again, I feel like it is utilizing the atonement and just so thankful for the people who love me and have been so supportive to not just me, but to my ex as well, you know, to help us be able to reach this kind of, like you said, ideal, not yeah. married, but healthy, and my children have the opportunity to have a healthy mom and dad and yeah. in their life. And that's really the next best scenario.
Did you get that awesome phase where like you wake up in sweats, not sweats like sweatpants, but like you just sweat the bed?
I actually did. Yeah, I literally
those were my favorite times.
Yeah, that was. I'm glad we can laugh about it now, because at the time
it's terrible.
I literally would wake up from a nightmare and I feared going to sleep
yeah.
because I knew my mind would race, and then I would dream about these nightmares and wake up and realize this is my life. This yeah. is not even a nightmare. And then my day would start and it would just replay, and
yeah,
it was hard.
You just, yeah, you walk through all that. I am glad that we can sort of laugh about it, but yeah, you wake up just sweaty, and then you didn't sleep well, and then you have to do it again. And then the fear of going to sleep because you mm-hmm. know that that's just going to happen again. Like, my house has never been more clean. I've never been in better shape, because it was like, it was literally anything that I could do to either not sleep or to not be alone. Right.
Yeah.
Because alone with my thoughts meant mm-hmm. quickly, I'm not worthwhile. If I would have been worth anything, she would have, done things in a different way.
Right.
Or, there was an interesting part of this for me. We only have just a couple of minutes. Was there a time where you questioned God about it?
I feel really fortunate. I even feel like my therapist, we've talked about spiritual gifts, and mm-hmm. that's one thing she's like, I feel like you just have this ability to have faith. And I don't know if that's because of losing my mom when I was young and understanding in the atonement at that time, when I did have kind of a yelling match with God a little
right.
to be like, this is not fair, I don't understand, and bawling, crying, trying to make sense. And I feel like for me it was difficult because that one was dealing with God. I mm-hmm. felt like she got cancer. She's a healthy person, and
right.
she's being taken from my life. Why? And
yeah, wasn't a condition of agency.
Yes, like you did this.
Yeah, right.
Although this one is difficult because it is like, why was I not alerted, or why was I not? But as I really did reflect back and look, I really could see how I was. But sometimes I even talked myself out of it, or I didn't come to the conclusion. Mm-hmm. And then also feeling like I literally feel like I was being prepared to be able to see what I saw, even though I wasn't prepared.
Yeah.
But there was so much support I felt like from my Heavenly Father, just being aware. And I don't really know how to describe that, put that into words. So I didn't ever question the why, you know, but I have questioned the difficulty of realizing that I kept my covenants. I did the right things. Right. I've just been trying to do the best I can at being a mom and a wife, and I'm not perfect. But why is I didn't make any of these choices yet? I'm hurting so much, and not just me, but my children. And that was definitely a difficult, and still is. And I've had to let go. And that's part of this process and healing, is letting go of the ideal and learning that there's not just one straight and narrow path to Christ, that we're all on these separate paths in a journey to get to Him. And right now I feel like I'm a planner. And so I like to kind of have an idea. And for the first time, I feel like I have this blindfold on and I just have my hands out and I'm like, lead me. And I've had to be really prayerful. And in the same time, by doing that and going to the temple as often as I can, I feel like I am even more in tune and closer to God than I've ever been in my life. And I remember people telling me that when they were reaching out about their divorce, like, I miss a little bit, you know, saying I miss that I was so close to God during that time. I miss that feeling because you really are so dependent on, like, I have no idea. It's that shattered glass or the mirror I'm looking at. I have no idea where to pull from, how I feel. I don't even know that I know who I am. I don't trust myself. I don't trust other people. And that's not typically my personality, you know, and do I love, and can I be loved? If so, am I worth being loved? You know, this is what happened to me. Is it my fault? It's all those questions that you ask yourself all the time that I have to just, again, go back to. I know that I'm a daughter of God. And what that means to me is that I'm imperfect, but can be made perfect through the atonement, which means I make mistakes too, maybe at different magnitudes, but we all are imperfect and our journey is not meant to be perfect and ideal.
Yeah. You mentioned resources. Where would you lead people if they're listening to this and they're like, oh, I'm in a similar sort of situation, where would you lead them?
Yeah, I think that for me, the betrayal trauma, there is just a lot of great resources. I know the LifeStar program offers, it's in a different program, but similar to kind of what the church already offers. There's also, for me, I do this Worth group, it's all in caps. They also have a program, the Men of Moroni, and that has been an amazing program for me to be able to be in these, you know, groups of women and relatable. I also know of a gal who, it's the BTR.org. She has resources specific to helping with the betrayal trauma. And I think it is important to recognize that betrayal trauma is basically, it's when someone that is close to you, like, you end up being the victim and you turn to them for support and survival. So it's kind of not like, hey, I'm having a marriage issue or I'm struggling with this. It's like, I have been betrayed. And I feel like that has been where it's been more specific to me and my situation versus just going to, like, my even regular therapy. Even though I loved my therapist and she was able to offer me resources, I feel like those are more specific to some of the things. And so those are just some of the resources. I know there's also another program that's in the Lehigh area where they even do testing so that if your child needs to go on some type of an antidepressant, they can help them know maybe how they metabolize it. Mm. So there's a lot of great things. And I am a huge advocate for just reaching out. And I myself have, where I've been posting and doing some things, part of what I've been learning in the betrayal trauma too. And I know that that's been where people have been brought to that to reach out to me. And it's been great to help people, because some of these people who are reaching out to me are bishops and stake presidency, trying to understand, you know, how they can help people. Sure. And then there's also people who are like, the only person that knows is my bishop, my therapist, and my husband, and we're trying to work through this, and I don't like my therapist. It doesn't make sense. And I think you just don't know what betrayal trauma is until you're in it.
Right.
So those are some of the places that I would suggest. And within even just that LifeStar program, like Dorothy Marion, she's one of the therapists that I see, and she's amazing and very helpful. So cool. There's a bunch of them there.
Cool. We ask everyone who steps into the Cultural Hall three questions, so I'll ask those of you right now. The first one is do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
Ward missionary.
Good for you. If you could pick a calling, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I would say someone to help assist people who are going through difficult times, because I feel like even going through this experience, again, I was lucky that my bishop and I had a good relationship, but I can see where there's not always follow-up, mm-hmm. you know, and sometimes too, especially when, say, like the husband did something, there's this desire to help that person and help them heal, but yet I'm at home raising the kids in a difficult situation as
sure.
well. And I feel like I can see where that would be really valuable to, even if it was someone in Relief Society to, I don't know, just be there or listen. I know that so many people don't always necessarily want to share, or mm-hmm. that's kind of a vulnerable spot, but I do see that that would be an awesome calling to be able to be relatable, to go and listen, to just be like, I don't even have to know, but just supporting that person, especially when nobody else knows.
Yeah.
Because it is really, but the bishop knows, but how can we like utilize that, the we can use these resources. We have the hugest women's organization in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, how can we utilize all these amazing women to help support and love each other even more?
So the ward supportive listener.
Exactly.
I
love
it. I'll talk to your bishop. I'll let you interpret this one even more with whatever you define it. And maybe it won't be hard at all. What is your favorite part of your faith?
My favorite part about my faith
mm-hmm.
is the atonement, just because I think it applies to everyone. It's a gift that's already been given to us. We just need to open it and use it.
Yeah.
And I feel like for me, that has been my lifesaver. For me, is when I was on my knees or crying so hard, I couldn't understand how to literally go on.
Mm-hmm.
And not even understanding how to turn that over to God, but praying that this is just too much. I yeah. cannot even take on all the responsibilities I need. I feel like that would be, for me, absolutely.
Yeah. Marnie Bone, thank you so much for being here. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen to it this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen to it next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat, it's sure to be neat on the back.